Okay, so we're going to start this Shem Pathways of Joy.
Yeah.
Okay. Today's Pathways of Joy is Torah. It's own. It's like a new one. Interesting. I've never done this one, but I got a request to do about Torah. So we'll do about Torah. Certainly is a strong pathway. I mean, the verse says you don't have to be. You just need to know the Psalms, right? It says the Torah is more precious, more. I guess precious than gold, and from very, very fine, very fine gold, and more sweeter than the best honey.
But won't
and most wondrous.
That's okay.
Taste. It says, "Bikudei Hashem esam Yeshayim esam
chilei." Okay, call me back.
The the rules of Hashem, the Torah also, are straight and they make the heart glad. They gladden the heart. We know that every time we say the brachas on the Torah, we say, Baharevna, make the Torah sweet to us. And the Torah is supposed to be very sweet. When a person learns Torah the way he's supposed to, everything works out. Everything is beautiful and special, especially learning deeper things, learning a little Zohar, that's unbelievable the work a person gets from that. But every bit of Torah has a tremendous sweetness to it. It has power and potential to really fix my problems. Torah has the ability to bring me back to Hashem no matter where I might have fallen, if I do it right. If I learn Torah to connect to Hashem, the Torah will help me get out of my problems in amazing ways that I couldn't even imagine. That's what Rav Nachman says, the Gemara tells us. Verse 3 says, I wish if they would only leave me, but keep my Torah. The aspect of the Torah is that it will bring us back to Hashem. As long as we want to get, that's our goal. If that's our goal, we'll get to Hashem. If that's not your goal, you're not going to get anywhere. That's what Chaim Volozhiner says when you send a friend up, you say, could you go up four flights, your child? So go up four flights and get me this thing. Or 10 flights, whatever long it is. And there's steps. So, if he starts to go, even if he walks pretty slowly, and you say, hey, when are you going to get the thing? He says, well, I'm going. I'm just walking a little slow today, whatever it is. So, you understand. He's going. He just takes time. But if he just stands in his place, he's stationary, so why aren't you going? Why are you just standing here? If you're going to do it, so do it. So, it's the same thing with, we talk Shalom Lishma, we learn the Torah, not for its own sake, from ulterior motive. If you do it, if you do that, it turns to for Hashem's sake. That's only if you want to get to Hashem's sake. But if I don't care about doing it for Hashem's sake, I never will. Torah itself has a very strong power to break through the husks, the negative forces, the klipos, all the bad, all the evil. Why? Why does Torah have this power? Because Torah tends to make a person very flexible. First of all, Torah is a way of cleaving to Hashem, because an artist and his work are one. When you want to know an artist, how can I know who is this artist? What's he or she like? How do I know? He said, you can either meet the artist, or you can start an artist's work. Both will tell you an awful lot about the person. So as it were, that's how we cleave to Hashem, by learning Torah. So Torah and Yisrael and Hashem are all one. So Torah, there's no words for the joy of Torah. That's what the Chazon Ish says. Who is a chacham? Who is a wise man? He who is happy in his learning. The Chazon Ish says, what does that mean? It means you open your Gemara, or you open your Halacha, or you look at whatever you're learning. And the moment you start to look at the word, you start to be happy. Say, thank you Hashem, I'm doing your Torah. Every word of Torah is more precious than all the mitzvahs. Very, very, we can't imagine what every word of Torah is doing or where it's going. Each word creates an angel, it's very powerful. We don't really understand what the Torah is and where it can take us. We just need a whole lot. So, that's on the one hand. Someone once came to Rav Nachman and he said, you know, I'm doing a certain sin, I can't stop. He said, you need to learn Torah. He said, Rabbi, I don't know how to learn. Said, oh, for that you need prayer. Pray. So Torah is a very important component of breaking out. Because we learn how to... So to learn how to be very, very patient and very happy, especially in Apple's Torah. But even in general, learning Torah in the right way with joy and vitality really, really uplifts us to the highest place. The Shem Yishmael explains, you know, it's very difficult, and many secular people claim it's almost impossible. Take a young man, and here he is, when does he get married? 20, 22? And he's just supposed to be celibate? I mean, how do you expect that to happen? It doesn't seem natural. It seems unnatural. I mean, this young man has drives. He has whatever he has. And he just cannot. He is not holding by. I mean, it's, you know, how is he supposed to be without becoming dysfunctional? How is he supposed to deal with this problem, with his, this part of his nature? So, the Shem Yishmael says, he says, you're right. But if he's learning Torah the way he should, he can transcend nature. And he gets somewhere else. And he manages. And the people who do well, the people who do best, are the people who are really holding the Torah. They're learning the Torah, they're holding the Torah, and they're okay. They're not in a depraved state, thank God. Everyone, we do our best. So that's the idea. It's not that it's impossible. It's possible. You have to be really holding the Torah. Of course, the more dysfunctional the family life, the more, not impossible, but virtually impossible it is for the young man to do that, because he doesn't even have, he doesn't, like we're learning in the Thoris, I mean, the bottom line is he has no connection to himself. How is he supposed to be complete and transcender? He just can't. He doesn't have it together. For who am I? Who in the world am I? I don't know who I am. I don't know. I can't face myself. I can't. Everything's very painful for me. So what do I do? How do I deal with it? You know, it can be. So that gets difficult. That's a higher mishpacha. That's a higher calling in a certain way. And he does his best. We all do our best. So Torah has a wondrous power to really change everything in the world.
Is I hear a lot in the Shirim here. Is God, the problem was a certain thing, and first the Shemiras at 9 is the problem? Go out to the
for
fields.
Sure.
Go out to the fields. No?
Of
we're
course.
Saying now that the Torah can also.
No, it's two things. It's two separate things. Here. The best way to watch your eyes is definitely the Torah. There is a story, a famous, famous story, about a certain young man. He lived in the Lower East Side, where Moshe Feinstein has Yeshiva MTJ, Mesifta Tiferet Yerushalayim. He learned in the Kol there. I don't know, this is maybe 40 years ago, maybe 50 years ago. And
1960s.
Yeah, 1960s, maybe 70s, I'm not sure actually. So yeah, maybe 70s actually. So not 50, 30, 40 I think. So Moshe passed away in 1984, it wasn't going to be then. But it might have been the 50s. I'm not sure how people dressed where he was. But, you know, 60s, certainly possible. 70s, you know, people were already dressing not so well. So he went into his Rosh Hashiva, Reb Moshe Feinstein, one of the greatest authorities of his day. And he said, I don't know what to do, but, you know, on the way to Yeshiva in the morning, even though I come early, pretty early, there are already people on the streets. And I'm sad to say, I know these girls, they don't know better. But the way they dress, I mean, it's just... it's very, very damaging. It's really hard for me to get through. I feel like I'm burning. I'm like being singed by this. I mean, I have to fight. It's really hard for me. I have a place in the Catskills where I'm going to go during the intercession. They used to do a 2-month intercession in the yeshiva in 2 weeks. So I'm wondering, maybe I should just go up now. If it's bothering me so much, the summer is, you know, it's hard for me. I have a place, I have the ability. Maybe I should do that. So as he's asking the question, he suddenly says, I don't understand. The Rosh Hashiva also, you also go the same way I go. With all these girls who they just, again, they don't know better. All sorts of different, you know, whoever they are. The American way, and they're just in various states of virtually undress. I mean, it's very sad. They don't know, they don't understand that it's not appropriate for them. And that it's not proper. And it's unseemly. They don't get it. And there's no way to explain it to them. So, like, the Shiva's going, coming to Shiva about the same time I am, returning also. So how do you manage? How does one manage not to feel like he's cooking in a fire? So Moshe said, what, you mean there are girls who are not dressed right on the way to Yeshiva and back? Really? I never saw them. He was thinking of learning, so he just didn't notice them. Didn't see them. What do you mean? So that's the best way. But to get to that is a little hard. You have to do his bonus. If you do his bonus, you can get there. If you don't, it's really hard.
But he's so involved with being a posek, and you know, he has to learn. He's into Torah so much. He went on his father's, no?
Rav Nachman said you can be a kosher Jew without his brothers. So you're just going to be someone who does not have tranquility of mind. You will not have tranquility of mind. No yeshiva das. You won't be relaxed, really relaxed, and not let anything disturb you. And like meditation, the same idea of just being, you know, he is calm, a special deep calmness, which you get from his bodhis, which you will not have. So, but you can be a kosher Jew. It's not impossible to be a kosher Jew without his bodhis. I'll say that. So, but you really ought to do his bodhis. Because if you want to get to a Moshe where things are not bothering me like that, his bodhis is the best way to do it. If it's positive. And if I'm focusing, first of all, on, like, it's level by level, you cannot jump. Have to say, I want to be happy with who I am in my situation now. That's first of all. Then also, please help fix it. But the first thing is be happy now, no matter what, any conditions. Not if I get the new car, and if this happens, if that happens, if I get this job, if I don't get this job, if I do this, if this happens, if that. If this one acts in this way that I like, and not in this way that I don't like, this, that, that is not going to work.
Is it enough to make percussions? As before you back up into an ashtray. I'm diving to Hashem. I'm in the shul. I'm not between the trees.
Uh-huh.
I'm making a request before I back up. I'm sure that's right. That's my inspirator.
That's great.
That definitely qualifies. I will attain tranquility.
Maybe. I mean, listen. What Nussin says, you need to know. There's a level called an hour a day. This is very important, precious. The Brest of Chassidim would say, if you don't have the hour, it's not so great. You need that hour. Not so great. You're not good part of a person. Like sort of gets a little too much leeway. But Rav Nachman says explicitly that some people cannot do an hour. What can we do? A few words, nothing more. A couple of words. And that's also very precious. And you have to do what you can. And Hashem does not expect more of you. Rav Yaakov Meir Shechter always says, he says, 1 hour is a high level. It's a level. It's not a. You build up to that. You have to know where you're holding. You can. You have to get to a place where it's real. But the first thing of his bonus is finding out how to be happy. Who am I? And being happy with who I am. And usually, like, you know, we really don't know who we are. That's the problem. I have no idea who I am. Who am I? What makes me tick? What's going on? Like? A little bit inside here and there. And the more his bonus you do. The more you start to be activated, you start to be less potential, more actual, more real, actualized.
Suggestion is start by saying, thank you, Yoshem. Mm-hmm. Thank you for the bus. Thank you for the train. Thank you for the stores that you go to. Thank you for your friends. Thank you for your wife. Mm-hmm. Thank you for your children.
Absolutely. Beautiful. Yeah, but Rav Arash has a whole syllabus for how trying to do an hour, which I'm sure you know. And one of the things he says is maybe to start with thank you, I think. It's a great idea. Maybe it's your own, I don't know. It doesn't matter. All the same. Because it's, you know, it works and it's true. It's just, you know, like the Rambam says, I don't care who said it. Just tell me what he said. Let's see. You know, it's good to pray, but like bottom line is like.
I got it from Updraw who got it through.
Oh, there we go. Excellent. But nevertheless, the bottom line.
I mean, I may be screwing up, but it's like I.
You know, I'm sure you're doing very well, Bez Hashem. But the bottom line is that like I want to. You have to find out if you can do that also. Sometimes I can't do that either. Thanking, usually I can. And really, it's a good syllabus. It's a very good way of, maybe it's a good way to try. But it's worth doing that hour if you can. It's worth it. But don't be despairing if you can't. And be happy with what you do. That's for sure. Because I know a lot of people who went through different phases of life where they could not do no hour. Forget it. Whenever they're alone with themselves, they feel like they deserve to be hit over the head. And they're not doing these photos. It's very, very... disconnect. I mean,
sometimes the evil inclination, the snake, just fills your mind with, for lack of a word, garbage. And you can't, all you can say is like, Thank you, Hashem, for letting me be in Israel. Thank you, Hashem, for my wife. Thank you, Hashem, for my children. And then, you know, your mind just wanders off to whatever.
For sure. And that's what Rav Nosson says about saying a few words. But there's a different level entirely of person who's so broken right now that he just can't. Maybe he can say thank you. Maybe he can't. He can't. If he sees himself, he just wants to, I don't know what he wants to do. He cannot face it. I can't face it. He sees himself, and that's why he's doing his behavior. That's why he's smoking. That's why he's going to the cookies all the time. That's why he's doing whatever he's doing. Like all the, again, the whole checklist, right? Gambling and this and everybody. There's no end to the things he might be doing, or a combination of things he might be doing, because I can't face up to who I am to me. To me, I am a failure. I am this. I am unworthy. I am this. I am that. Without an end of different negative.
That's the depression.
Yeah, that place is brokenness. He's depressed too. Depressed, he might be fighting with. He has different. We're not his advice to be happy when you're depressed. Here, he tries to learn Torah. He loves to learn Torah. When the Torah, he's happy. See, great. Even when you're dead, you open that Gemara. You open. You get through it. Remembers the Chazanish. He learns. He loves to learn. He's in seventh heaven. Great, but he's in tremendous pain. It doesn't have to be.
Was there a swing depression, or let me rephrase that? Is depression the opposite of joy?
Is depression the opposite of joy? We have to separate between pain and depression. There's pain and there's depression. I can be in pain and still like slog along, and then I can sort of transcend it and be happy. But then I can have this like pile of like depression where I'm so down and it's so hard for me. I can't. You know, I need my security blanket, and I can't think about anything. So sometimes I stave off the depression. I fight it off. How do I fight it off? By going into one of these, for example, one of these pathways. Say, one of the person will say, "Well, you know, it's very precious what I do," or, "Well, you know, Torah, that's why Torah." Or I have to be careful. How do I to realize that, you know, you're a real fear of Hashem, real awe of Hashem means that I'm happy. And really, he goes into that, he does that, and at that point, he's not depressed, but he's broken. So, things are going to happen that his insecurity is going to.
So, how do you define broken?
Broken is when a person experienced trauma that caused him to feel like I cannot be one with myself. Because living in the world as I see and experience it is just too hard. I can't do it. So, what we do is we retreat within ourselves, and we do not come out so fast. We feel very, very vulnerable, and can't trust anyone, for sure not, a minimal, and very slow learn to trust. And, you know, that's what I went through, so I got these beatings. It might not be physical with the hand either. It could be with the tongue. Tongues can be worse sometimes. Depends what's done. Depends how things are done, how lowering experiences are, and how many they are, and how traumatic they are. You know, and then the person's like, so this person, he by definition cannot stand himself. So you want me to be alone with myself and work on my problems? I mean, they're endless. And I hate myself. I can't stand. Like, he's not expressing this. He doesn't know this. But I hate my guts. What do you mean? I don't wanna hang out with myself and ask Hashem to fix what I think is unfixable and irredeemable deep down, or at least suspect it and really, really fear it. So he can't do that. He can just try to be happy, say a few words here and there. He can do an hour. The hour is not gonna be these bullets we've not been talking about at all. Just gonna be asking for things to Hashem in a very maybe sort of voice, maybe whatever, and that's it. He's not going to be really healthy as far as where the person is happy with who he is. I'm happy with who I am, and like, now I'm asking you, please help me. And I'm worthy because you're unbelievable. You're just, give kindness, which I don't deserve, which no one deserves. But not that I'm really worthy, but I don't have to be sad about it. I don't feel sad. And I don't want any more of these bad patterns of thought. I don't want these bad patterns of emotion. I don't want them. I'm not interested in them, and I don't have to have them anymore. I'm going to figure them out one at a time and throw them out. Nothing to do anymore. And I don't care about things that used to be very important to me because of my insecurity. I don't care about them anymore. care about being controlled. I don't care about things being just the way I like them to be or I want them to be. I'm going to do things in a manner that's going to relieve me of suffering. I'm not going to suffer anymore. I had enough. And this person, he's right now, he's potential. So he can't do anything. And his Buddha is like, he's not there yet. He's not a person yet. But we're learning, he's in the trine. And Paro is the me. Yeah, you know, he got the yam. He's got this Bechina of the 15th Sharmabina. And that's like the same idea of, you know, I think the Chassidus Farim point out, if not, maybe it's my own idea, that the Yud and Mem of the last two letters of the Shem Elokim that we're learning about in the Mashir, okay, that forms the word me. The Rebbe really says it, because the Rebbe says, Mi Hashem, Hashem, Bekolo, right, who's Hashem? That's the Yud Mem that Paro had. That's what we saw. So the aspect of me, what does me mean? That's what Paro does. Paro says, who do you think you are? Don't you know that you're nothing? Don't you know, etc., etc. It's always who? Who are you anyway? What are you asking Hashem for? I mean, he's not going to give it to you. You deserve it. It just continues these like endless tapes, endless playing. And like, the person has to know, I have to realize that at some point I'm going to be able to leave Mitzrayim. But right now, whatever reason, I cannot face myself. I need the EverQuest. I can't live without EverQuest. Forget it. That takes me out of myself. I need my fantasy, the writing. I can't live without reading that stuff. Forget it. I have to like imagine myself somewhere else because it's just too painful to be me. Being me stinks. that's the way the person feels. So for him, these bodhis, he's not really going to get anywhere with it. He can slowly, like again, learning the things from learning the Ari. Learning the Ari, has the power to really soften this, nevertheless. But there's still, it takes a lot of time. And you need a lot of help from Hashem. And Hashem said, no, don't worry. It all happens just the way it's supposed to happen. To release the person and get him out when the time is right. Until then, he has to suffer, he has to suffer. And it's very hard. But if that's his situation, so he can't, it's not one day that this is, I'm having a hard day now. So just thank you, Hashem. You know, it's a hard day. I give myself leeway. I can't do this hour today. I just can't. It's that I don't exist yet. I don't exist. So I don't exist. I don't exist. It's just too hard to exist. I got that lesson from the trauma I went through. I figured that out. I can't exist. I just can't do it. So no, I don't want to exist anymore. I just don't want. So he can't do his bodhis. He can't do anything. But he can try to access Torah. He can use Torah. Torah can help him. Torah can help him on a lot of levels, in a lot of ways. And if he's holding by mustering up the strength to think and learning, work and learning, it can be very good for him. But you have to use it the right way. So his bonus is a tool. And it's not, I very much like the focus on the fact that it's not every person, no matter who they are, from 3 years old until 103 years old, or 123 years old, has to and can do now as his bonus. It's not true. Even more than that, there's another point that I don't know whether I should make or not. But there's a dispute, I can make it in a particular way. There's a dispute in Breslov, among Breslovers, that after many years of doing healthy as both of this, is it better, can it be, that a person will get to a place where he wants to be more into his bonus? Like he just doesn't want to speak anymore, he just wants to think, experience, meditate, or not? So it's not a simple answer to this question. But it seems like the Arizal says, for sure it is. That you can be in a place where meditation is better for you if you go to go through this bonus and then you move on. That's what the Rebbe seems to say. He says the level of Yechida, the highest level of the soul. I mean, others are you, I'm not going to say. But it's bodhisattva is the way to get calmness, to get. And that's what I think bother me in life. I don't need to let these things bother me. I don't care. I don't care if I'm right. I don't care if I'm within my rights. My right. For
the podcast, who is Arizal and what time period is that?
Arizal lived about 400 years ago, somewhat over, and he was the person who did the most to reveal Kabbalah. Because the Rosh Bereshit Bar Yochai put out the Zohar, but you don't understand anything from the Zohar. And even his, the one before him, who was very great, Ramak, who wrote wondrous things in the Zohar, the Arizal revealed the inner aspect of that. All the Hasidut and all of deep thought in Jewish, pretty much everything in Jewish, again. Not necessarily the philosophical bend, but mostly everything real and deep and helpful is going to have, going to be sourced in that result. That's usually the way it is, especially from when it was available in the other state. Very, very powerful. The Baal Shem Tov had a dream that the Rizal came to him. So he said, I don't understand. You taught all these very, very high concepts, but you don't know how to apply them at all. What do you do with them? So the Rizal said, I didn't have any time. I only had 18 months with the Chaim Vital. Then I left the world. So I couldn't also reveal what it means and how to apply it to your divine service. That's your job. The Rizal, I mean, he died very young. It's also an old story. It's a crazy story. What happened with him and how, why, what. People think they're so smart. I mean, he told his chief disciple, I have to teach you, Chaim Vital, nobody else. So Chaim Vital said, no, you have to teach my teacher this one and that one. He said, I'm telling you, it's going to be tragic what you're doing. It's a really bad idea. I can't imagine that's worth it to teach me and not them. He said, you have a special soul and you're the one who needs to know. Chaim Vital said, oh, come on, I know I've sinned, I know I've messed up. He said, that is irrelevant, because sometimes a person comes from a place where the sins aren't meaningful so much, because it's hard to understand how they possibly avoid them. He said, it's not true. The sins don't show. How is it possible to avoid them? So you come from a place that's deep in the Klipas, and your soul's very high.
I'm sorry, deep in the...
In the husks, in the outer forces, and your soul's very high. The only way to come to it is in this particular way. To have challenges which are virtually impossible to overcome. So someone who has challenges like that, someone who's born, and he doesn't know what Shabbos is, he broke Shabbos, okay? It's not his fault that he broke Shabbos. And he might have done things that he knew better, really, but he was very strongly driven to do them. And it's also not necessarily counts for so much. It's not clear. Depends on where he's from. Depends on what soul he has. If he's broken to pieces, like he's really, really broken and feels he's nothing at all, and feels like if he died it wouldn't mean anything, even though he knows his head, yeah, it says the Torah now, it's really worthwhile, he learns about it, but that's what he feels. So it's very hard to tell him it's your fault this, and it's like someone who's healthy. The person, he doesn't have any existence yet. He's a slave. Paro's in charge of him. What do you want from his life? What exactly, again, the judgment and the calibration on high is exactly worked out in accordance with where the person is from, what they went through, and what they're supposed to do. And sometimes a person needs to fall to do their purpose in the world. And that's why there's something about Tshuva. The person comes in from outside because he needed to do what he did. Very often, this is the way it is, and it's counterintuitive. You say, what? But it's true. That the person, without the experience he or she had in the secular world, he or she could not do their task as a religious Jew properly. It just wouldn't happen, because I would come from somewhere else. There's certain advantages that I got from where I come from, and like, I wouldn't have them otherwise. And I need them. And, you know, this is something surprising for spouses who marry Baal Tshuva, man or woman, and they say, well, you know, I'm kind of, sometimes they feel like they're settling. I'm kind of settling in a way. And sometimes not, because it's like, well, she or he is a Baal Tshuva, but I think they're the right person, so I'm not settling. Their past is something Hashem did. This is the right person. Whatever their mindset is, they stay married forever long. And then the person gets this understanding that, you know, if he or she had not been through what they did, or been through, I would have been in trouble. This is what I needed, this experience, to which I could never have gotten on my own. To get their experience in my life and put that into my life to open me up. And then they see, you know, not only was it not settling, forget about settling, that was, anyway, nonsense. But this relative said, you were settling. He was foolish. Fine. Not only was that totally untrue, but this is the only way it would have worked for me. I would have been hopelessly trapped and dead without this person's life experience that I needed to have. And it's something very, very, very deep and surprising. And it's true. So then it becomes, so now how do you work out what this person did when they didn't know better? Or they were starting to know better, right? How do you work that out if that's able to protect and help someone else and build them up and bring them into where they need to be. How are you supposed to work that out? That's exactly what the Rish says. He says, there's no way to work that out. You don't know. There's no way to know. And very, very often when this sort of thing is the case, then those so-called sins were very little. They were less than, I don't know what. Because they don't have any big meaning on the big picture at all. That's how do we know this? He knew about Rechavi Tau. So he told him, let me just teach you, and then I will teach you, and then you'll teach them. And Rechavi Tau did not want to listen to him. So the Rizal died like 2 weeks later, 3 weeks later, right away. Quick, a few weeks. Okay, very quickly. He said, just let me teach you. And he didn't know better. But getting back to the subject, the idea is Torah has a power to purify. There's a power to make the person flexible. There's a power to help a person transcend this world. Very, very, very strong. It's a tremendous, wondrous sweetness. We're not going to say the sweetness of Torah. When a person cleaves the sweetness of Torah, it's hard to understand how he comes back to the world again. It's so sweet. If you can get there, you're happy. And it's great. You have your shiur, you have your learning, you're just especially deeper things. But even whatever it may be, you can get to the sweetness of Torah. That's another way to get to joy. And yes, sometimes the person who can't do his post, at least learn. And that one, say, please help me do his post a little bit here and there. And yes, of course, that's true. Remember, I can do it if I need to. But I need to realize that if I'm miserable, the one making me miserable is me, not anybody else. I am making me miserable. Because no one else can make me miserable. I have free will. It's so strange, right? I might be in some desert island somewhere, just like winging it and surviving, and I might be very happy because I'm in control more or less. I have what I need. No one's getting in my way. No one's bothering me. No one's compromising me. But I'm still in a desert island because I decide what my thoughts are and where they go. It's up to me. So if I have a thought that makes me miserable, I'm deciding on some level not to correct a thought pattern that makes me miserable. Why would I do that? Must be I deserve to be miserable. In my deepest depths, I know I deserve to be miserable. And this is how I get there. Okay, so be miserable, like I shall. Come on, but it's too bad that that's the way it is. And the first thing is I don't care about my rights. I forego all rights, because rights kill me. If I still have a right, it's going to kill me. Because it's wrong, it's right. Forget about what's wrong and right. Just, there's an expression in Hebrew. Al tieh tzodek, tieh chacham. Be wise, don't be right.
Can you say it again slowly?
Or the other way. Be wise, don't be right. I'm the right one. Don't be wise, be smart. Don't like ruin your day and say, no, you cut me off. I'm so sorry. Fine, we're done. That's it. No problem. Doesn't pull his gun on me or anything. I don't have to yell and scream. I can just be smart. Who cares who's right? What's the difference? What does it mean right? It has no meaning. That's where we're holding. So Torah has to teach us to be flexible. Like the Lagon says, Torah teaches you to be, you learn things that are amazing to you, you didn't know before, and you're back and forth, that like breaks down my resistance to new ideas. And then I'm able to take a new idea and say, this needs to change. I'm really in prison, maybe I'll get out one day. I'm in Egypt, let me out, please. That's what it comes down to. Shem Shel Smizocha, to the aura of the Torah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.